Hello everyone, we are Taylor Wicker, Santiago Rodriguez, and myself, Carla Casadevall. We are all researchers working at Fresnel Lab at the University of Cambridge. And today we're going to explain to you how we can make fields from sunlight. At Fresnel Lab, we don't work alone. We work with this fabulous team of people for a common goal, which is to make renewable fields. We are 29 members in our group, and we all come from different countries and backgrounds, concretely 13 different countries, which offers an international, multidisciplinary, and enriched work environment. So today, what we will cover in the presentation is, what we want to do is a bit of overview of what we do in our lab. So for this reason, we want to start talking about what is chemistry, because we work on a chemistry lab, and we will follow up talking about the climate change and renewable energies, and then talking about possible solutions such as making solar fields. And finally, we'll end up with research examples from our lab, such as hydrogen production and CO2 reduction. So, as I just said before, we work in a chemistry lab. So the first thing that we want to talk about is, what is chemistry? Despite sometimes chemistry has bad connotations, and we mostly associate chemistry sometimes with contamination and waste and bad things, the reality is that chemistry is everything, and we find it in every aspect of our life. So we find it in the fertilizer industry, which allows to grow crops and so enables to have food for everyone. And we also use chemistry to generate the fuel that we use for transport and that we use every day to go to work or to go to school and for heating. Chemistry is also very important in the food industry. And it's also present in the pharmaceutical industry to produce all the medicines that we take when we are sick. So as you can see, chemistry is everything. Moreover, chemistry can help to change our society. Currently, we have important challenges to solve as a society, such as climate change, CO2 emissions. Indeed, this has a direct impact in climate change, as you will see later on along this talk, plastic waste, and the need to develop efficient and long-lasting renewable and cheap energy sources that can compete with fossil fuels so that we can guarantee energy access for everyone. Therefore, basic research can help to provide solutions to all these problems that affect our society. So we want to start explaining you what is global warming. You all have heard about global warming. And you, as you may know, it is caused by the accumulation of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, such as CO2. So we have these greenhouse gases that accumulate around the atmosphere, around our planet. And what happens is that the solar radiation is partially trapped by these gases. And also the infrared radiation from the Earth cannot fully escape the atmosphere. Therefore, it cannot be fully redispersed and part of it is trapped into the atmosphere. So this is causing that the planet is being heated and it's causing an increase of the temperature of the planet. So to solve this problem, the solution is to move from a society which is primarily based on fossil fuels, which is our current society, to a society that uses renewable energies as energy sources. So despite we still have fossil fuels, the truth is that we cannot use them at the rate that we are currently using, and consuming them all if we want to keep the global warming below 2 degrees. Also, if we want to guarantee the access of energy to every person in the planet, we cannot keep deploying fossil fuels because this will increase the pollution and thus it will increase the global warming of the planet. Therefore, the solution is to develop sustainable and efficient renewable energy sources. But the question is, which is then the best renewable source of energy that we can use? So, and the answer is clear, and we see it every day. So, solar energy. Solar energy is the most abundant renewable energy source that we have. In 1 hour of sunlight irradiation, we have enough energy to fulfill the year mankind energy consumption. Moreover, it is renewable. However, we have a problem with sunlight, with solar energy. The problem is that we have day and night cycles, and that it is difficult to transport. So with petrol or gasoline, it's very easy. We think about cylinders or bottles, and we can transport it. It's very easy, but we cannot take sunlight and put it into a cylinder and transport it, right? So we need to think about how we can transport it and bring it all over the planet. So as you can see, currently our society still relies a lot on fossil fuels as energy source because of this reason. And mostly these fossil fuels are used to generate the majority of the fuel and electricity that we use. And only 5% of the electricity comes from solar, wind, hydro, or other renewable energy sources. But with these renewable sources, we can only produce electricity, but not fuel so far. Therefore, it is clear that we need to do something to increase this number and to be able to deploy these renewable sources to make electricity, but also to make fuel that we need for transportation, for our home activities, and so on and so forth. A possible solution can be storing sunlight energy into chemical compounds, such as hydrogen, so that then we can obtain energy. Indeed, we produce 70 million tons of oxygen every year. And hydrogen is a more energetic molecule than gasoline. Indeed, 1 kilogram of hydrogen gives the same amount of energy that 2.8 kilograms of gasoline, which is a lot. Moreover, the advantage of hydrogen is that when we burn hydrogen, the only subproduct that we have is water. So we are not generating waste. So this technology is very attractive. And indeed, there are cars that already work with hydrogen. And now Taylor is going to explain you how we can produce this hydrogen.
Exactly. Thanks, Carla. So now the question is, how can we transform this great, abundant resource, sunlight, into useful energy like hydrogen? Well, we can actually draw inspiration from nature, from the grass and flowers in your own backyard. The plants all around us use a process called photosynthesis to turn the energy and sunlight into food. Plants contain a pigment called chlorophyll, which absorb blue and red light, and our white leaves are green. The energy in that absorbed sunlight excites an electron in the chlorophyll, and the electron can then be used to drive a series of chemical reactions. The end result is that plants can use sunlight to transform carbon dioxide and waters into sugars that feed the plant, as well as oxygen that we breathe. And it's not just plants that can do this. Algae and certain types of bacteria can also photosynthesize. While removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and making sugars is beneficial, what we ideally want to do is generate fuel not for our bodies, but rather for our vehicles, homes, and industries. And this is where the research field solar fuels comes in. Solar fuels are basically an artificial form of photosynthesis where we store the energy in valuable chemical fuels. The most common process is called water splitting, in which you break apart water into its constituent components, hydrogen and oxygen. And Carla has already explained how hydrogen has enormous potential as a future green fuel. You can do other reactions as well, but I'll let Santi discuss that later on in the presentation. Now, for water splitting, the general principle is that the hydrogen in water takes electrons or is reduced into hydrogen gas. The oxygen in turn gives electrons or is oxidized into oxygen gas. The energy required to do this can come from electricity, in which case the reaction is called electrochemistry, or from sunlight for a photocatalytic process, or a mixture of both if we're looking at photoelectrochemistry. Our group primarily focuses on the latter two processes, so we can drive this cool chemistry directly with the sunshine all around us. And to describe them in a bit more detail, I'd like to first explain what a photocatalyst is. But before we even get that far, let's start by dropping the photo and figuring out what a catalyst is. As Carla pointed out earlier, we are surrounded by chemical reactions. Some of them need a little help to get started. The paper on your desk, for example, isn't going to spontaneously catch fire. You need to apply a spark in order to get it to burn. Other reactions happen seemingly on their own. Like if you leave an apple on your counter for a couple weeks, it's going to decompose and become pretty gross. Now, what all chemical reactions have in common is something called an activation energy. This is basically the amount of energy you need to supply in order to turn your reactants into your products. So what a catalyst does is lower that activation energy, making it easier for the reaction to proceed. So you can kind of think of a catalyst like that initial flame to make your paper burn, or the heat that you might apply to your apple to make it decompose faster. Now, a photocatalyst is basically a lazy version of a catalyst. It needs an extra boost from sunlight in order to work. A photocatalyst is a semiconductor that in its ground state doesn't do anything. In the dark, it's not going to make any reaction happen faster. But when you apply sunlight, the electrons in the semiconductor can go to a higher excited state, which enables the material to now act as a catalyst and lower that activation energy. In our case, the reaction that the photocatalyst is speeding up is water splitting. Now, this is all very conceptual, but to give you a taste of what photocatalysis actually looks like in the lab, here's a picture of some of the samples that we run in our lab on a daily basis. Specifically, our group looks at a range of different earth-abundant photocatalysts like metal oxides. You might have heard of titanium dioxide, which is in many products, including sunscreen, as well as newer materials like carbon dots, which are tiny nanoscale spheres of carbon, carbon nitrides, and molecular catalysts that we synthesize in our lab. But splitting water into hydrogen and oxygen over these photocatalysts is often limited by the oxidation half reaction. Making oxygen is just slow and requires a lot of energy. So what we can do instead is to replace the formation of oxygen with a more useful and faster oxidation half reaction, such as making new chemicals or disposing of waste. The latter is a process called photoforming, in which we use these same photocatalysts I mentioned previously to simultaneously break down waste into hydrogen fuel, break down water into hydrogen fuel, and break down waste into smaller useful chemicals like acetate, also known as vinegar. This process works with many different types of waste, including plastics like polyethylene terephthalate, the stuff plastic water bottles are made of, which is actually what this photograph on the right side of the screen is showing. You can also throw in biomass, food, and mixed waste, so it's really versatile and allows us to transform some of the 2 billion tons of waste that we produce each year into more valuable fuels and chemicals. We've recently shown that we can photoform all of these different types of waste over inexpensive and earth-abundant photocatalysts such as carbon nitride and carbon dots. We're also exploring the commercialization potential of this process and hope to upscale and start applying photoreforming in real-world scenarios in the next few years. I'll now hand it over to Santi, who will talk more about different types of reduction half reactions.
Thank you very much, Taylor. So with Taylor, we just explore how we can replace the oxygen half reaction with a useful process, dispose of waste, for instance. But what if we want to make something different than hydrogen? Well, this is something our group is currently investigating in order to turn harmful greenhouse gases, like carbon dioxide that Carla has introduced, into useful carbon-based fuels and chemicals. So some of the benefits of using CO2 are, for instance, we can get rid of these greenhouse gases that be in the atmosphere by transforming them into a carbon-based substance that can be stored away. Another useful benefit of using CO2 is that it can be a raw material to produce all these chemicals and fuels that we can actually use in a circular manner by using our current infrastructures and technologies such as chemical industry and transportation. So continuing Milo's explanation on what is a photocatalysis and a catalyst, our group has been exploring four different strategies to transform CO2 into fuel and chemicals using just water and sunlight. For instance, the first strategy, which you can see in this slide depicted, focuses on using liposomes, which are an scaffold or a structure that is made of soapy molecules known as lipids. They are these gray color structures in the center. So what we use them for is to mobilize together in the same environment two different types of molecules. The first type is a light absorbing molecule, which is it's very similar in concept to what photocatalytic materials are. So it absorbs light and produces an energy input or electrons to a second type of molecule, which is the catalyst. In this case, a molecule itself that is able to transform CO2 and water into a mixture of two gases, carbon monoxide and hydrogen, that are depicted on the right-hand side of the slide. This is also known as synthesis gas, or syngas for short, which is a widely used mixture of gases in the chemical industry that is utilized to produce plastics, fuels, or even fertilizers. Another second strategy that our group is exploring is the mixture together of nanomaterials and again, molecular catalysts to absorb sunlight. In the case of the nanomaterial, is again a photocatalyst to transform CO2 into fuels and chemicals. In the picture, you can see Dr. Qian Wang, who researched in our laboratory how to incorporate both components, these nanomaterials that are able to absorb light, and the molecular catalyst into a sheet that she is holding in her hands. And this, in the inset, you can see, for instance, a zoom up of the surface of the material. As you can see, it's very rough, and it has a lot of different environments where the molecules can be immobilized very strongly and efficiently. So this material is used to transform CO2 into a formate with a high efficiency using just water and sunlight. The structure of formate, you can see it at the on the right-handed side, and it's a useful chemical based on carbon that is used in industrial processes. As a third strategy, our research group investigates the use of enzymes for fuel production. So you can see on the right side of the slide, you can see a drawing of an enzyme structure. They are, in fact, biological machines that are able to catalyze many different reactions. And they are actually found in all living organisms. The enzymes we use are often obtained from plants and microbes. And some two examples of them are hydrogenase and formate dehydrogenase enzymes, which respectively can form hydrogen gas from water and formate from CO2. They are basically, as you can see, immobilized again in a particle that it's a photocatalyst that provides the energy to drive the reaction that the enzyme requires. The fourth strategy is focus on the use of bacteria. So bacteria is, in this case, also utilized together with a light absorbing photocatalytic nanomaterial. And bacteria can be considered as a living catalyst that can be used by us to produce useful chemicals and fuels, again, from CO2. Bacteria in nature is able to, some bacteria, not all of them, can feed directly from CO2. So we can harvest this ability that they have and use it in our benefit with using a little help of the photocatalytic materials that are able to absorb light and provide that extra energy input necessary that the bacteria requires to transform CO2 into a different chemical or fuel. So the use of bacteria as a biocatalyst is very advantageous because they are alive, they are living organisms, and they can therefore heal if any damage occurs. This is something that, for instance, is yet not possible with molecular catalysts or enzymes. Also, bacteria is another interesting aspect of their use is that they can be genetically engineered to tailor the type of chemistry that they can do, producing new chemicals and fuels in a green way to fulfill our needs. So to sum up, our core messages are, in the first case, that we need new ways to generate renewable fuels and chemicals to fulfill the energy demands that our society has and will have while preventing climate change. The second one, and we really hope that you are now agreeing with us, is that photocatalysis is an exciting strategy to generate green fuels and chemicals from abundant resources such as water, CO2, as well as waste. The third point, our take home message, is that there are so many more ways to strategies to explore, and really it's only our imagination, the limit, that we have to find the new ways to tackle challenges such as climate change. And to finish, well, we really hope that you are now a bit more excited about the amazing world that photocatalysis is. And if you would like to learn more, please check on our website, where there are lots of more videos on our outreach section, or get in touch through Twitter at ResnerLab. Thank you for your time, and hope that you have a great day.